pick a window.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I am your host, the Radioactive Professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends. In the north, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird Jeff Bell.
So I think I figured out the problem of getting sound cues to play so you guys can hear them.
Okay. Yeah.
And I figured it out yesterday in a fit of brilliance at the shop in the middle of another chore. My brain went, hey, you know, if you ran this cable from here to there, that'd probably work out pretty good for you. And I'm like, oh, thanks. Where the fuck have you been for 7 fucking months?
No shit.
Are we going to test it today then?
Nope. I didn't do it.
Oh, I was so excited though.
We had one of the kids had a birthday and I went up to Layton last night.
It's a great town. Happy birthday, kid.
Yeah, whatever. And we had burgers at the Red Robin.
Yum.
We had some endless fries at the Red Robin, which was nice. Mm-hmm. We had some cake. We gave away some presents.
Nice.
So we were there and then, you know, dropping other kids off. That actually, I think, took longer than dinner. Yeah, babe? Yeah. And then we just got home late. And so it was enough for me that I just had to build the shows and get all the links out. So I did not run any cabling. And then it has become my habit lately on Sunday mornings. Mm-hmm. I can't wake the fuck up until like 8:39, no matter what I do. And it doesn't matter. I just cannot get up on Sunday. It is the end of my week and I'm just fucking dead. So I didn't have time to do it this morning. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's fair, man. No, I'm never going to judge that. Yeah.
Sleep is good. Get the sleep. If you can get the sleep, get the sleep. Yep.
Oh, but
I know
you're
doing better than me. My last few weeks, I can't get my butt out of bed before about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning.
There you go.
Mm. So,
well, if you know, the coffee's in the other room, so I have to get up. Mm. That's what it is.
That's the motive there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
True.
I don't. It's like Pepe Le Pew following along after the kitty cat lady. You know,
right.
Where I sort of float on my tiptoes into the kitchen following the smell of fresh brewed coffee. Or like this morning, coffee that was fresh brewed, waited 2 hours, the machine turned off. and now it's just a little lukewarm, but it still beats not having any.
That's right. Right. Lukewarm coffee is better than no coffee. Agreed.
I'm just pretending it's iced coffee that's been sitting in the car too long.
No, there you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you could even make it iced coffee because at least this time you could pour it over ice and the ice wouldn't just immediately melt, you know, like you do when you have a hot brewed cup and you pour it over ice. It's like, well, that kind of defeated the purpose and watered it all down.
There you go.
Oh, I have solutions for that. You either A, make coffee ice cubes, or mm-hmm. B, make your coffee twice as strong.
There you go.
Then you dilute it down with the ice. See?
Mm.
Master manipulator over here. I know how to work my coffee.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
How about you, Joss? What have you been up to?
I haven't done baseball talk in a while, you guys, like all season. And mm-hmm. my team made it to the Southern Half Pioneer League Championship, and we won the Southern Half Division.
Awesome. Woo-hoo!
So we went to baseball games. On Wednesday was game 2 here in Ogden, so we went to that. And then mm-hmm. Thursday was game 3. For the division, and we won the division, so we get to the championship. So now we went to a baseball game again on Saturday and watched them win game 1 of the championship series. So I've had a very baseball filled week this week, an Ogden filled week this week.
Lots of inside baseball. I love it.
Lots of baseball. Yeah. But no, it was a good week. I did manage to sneak in a trip down to Dr. Volt's. And picked up my missing issue of Daredevil. But then because we had so much baseball, I didn't get to read it. So.
But I did get to see your ma.
You did get to see my ma. Braxton tried to tell her I didn't have a hold.
All right.
And she was like, no, she has the new Daredevil came out. And he was like, oh, let me find that for her. So it hadn't made it in my hold. But thankfully, no. Mom was looking out for me, and Braxton got the copy.
No. So I'll tell you what happened.
Oh, okay.
We got shorted on Daredevil.
Oh, no.
And for number one, and they had just come in that day and had not yet been.
They hadn't gotten filed away yet.
Yeah.
Fair. Very fair.
But yeah, they had like literally shown up that morning. I had just gotten them checked in before your mom showed up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice. What about you guys, though, Jeff? How was your week?
Well, the week was fucking awful, but I got to have a cheeseburger last night that you dipped into fondue, bacon cheddar fondue.
Shut up. Are you kidding me?
It's... You know,
that's a fat boy meal if ever I heard one, man. That's awesome.
Is it? Does it live up to the expectation that I now have in my head?
Let me put it this way. Now, I'm going to be kind of an asshole for a second. I apologize to the people of Utah because you're all too high strung. Training table was fucking awful. It was where you went to eat bland food. It's where if you wanted cheese fries, it was that weird powder coated shredded shit you get in a bag, you know. The burgers were bland and dry. That's training table to me. And they're gone. I can't believe they're coming back. People, you know, we do DoorDash now. You can order on a phone. Okay? Your nostalgia is silly. However, the second blandest stack of burgers is Red Robin.
Oh.
So when you take a bland burger that is just dry as shit and you dip it in a bubbly cheese sauce that is actually fucking exceptional...
Mm-hmm. Oh!
It turned out good, and I was quite happy with my choice. But that's just it. I like diner burgers. I like a burger that you bite into, and you just taste 30 things at once, and your mouth's all happy, and the bun starts to split because there's too many yummy juices, and you do not get that at a chain restaurant.
Mm. That is quite true. I will be honest, I don't eat at the chain restaurants in town. So, as a general rule, like once in a while we do, but yeah, for the most part, we do not.
I disagree and agree. I agree that Red Robin, I've only had a few really good burgers there. Usually they've got to have like a mega sauce on there that just, you can't even, you know, it just makes the whole burger delicious. But no, I always had a great meal at Training Table. Mind you, I went for some really good burgers there. I always went for their most interesting burgers. So I always liked Training Table. And I never ordered cheese fries. I didn't like their cheese fries. I agree with that. But whatever they coated their onion rings in was some of the best coating I've ever had on an onion ring.
I don't believe I've ever had their onion rings. So I'll give you that one.
Man, their onion rings were amazing. And we would order a feast when we'd go in. You know, you get a little garden salad to start just because we were trying to be healthy. And then we'd order a half order of fries and an order of onion rings and share those. And then we'd each get a burger. Michelle always liked her blue bacon burger. And I would order something, you know, crazy off the menu. And just sometimes you get disappointed. Sometimes you wouldn't, you know, it was always fun. And that's kind of the thing with Red Robin. You go in and you're like, I'm rolling the dice on this burger. It could taste like shit. I'm just going to go for it. What the hell?
It's true.
The fries were exceptional.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So I was pretty happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So last weekend was Ultimate Bob Easton's birthday.
Oh.
And I wasn't able to. I got really booked up last weekend. And I wasn't able to get. You know, hook up with him, take him to lunch or something, you know, just as a birthday present. So I got to do that yesterday.
Nice. And,
So you talk about your good burgers, you know, he had mentioned on a Facebook post, he wanted somebody to take him to Five Guys. I'm like, done. That's easy. We'll go to Five Guys. So yeah.
See, now Five Guys is the kind of sloppy ass, over moist, yeah, delicious fucking, holy shit, did I just spend that on a piece of food burger?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Five Guys a lot.
It is worth every penny you spend on that burger, providing you don't just put ketchup and a pickle on it.
Yeah.
You know, you got to load it. You got to put all the stuff they offer on it. If you're just not one of those who puts toppings on burgers, like my daughter, that's not the restaurant for you, in my opinion. Me, I like to cover it. I'm like run it through the salad bar and then throw a few of those grilled, you know, those fried up things on top of it. That's what I want to see. So yeah, but always worth it for me. Yeah, delicious.
How was Ultimate Bob's birthday though?
I mean, I wasn't there for his birthday itself. I guess he had a good birthday, you know, mostly at home with his family. Their times are getting a little tougher, with some health problems, but, not really my story to tell. So, it's just, you know, he's got some things he's looking forward to. He's actually going to an audition today for a show. So, good to see him getting back out there, as it were.
Yeah.
Put yourself back out there, young man.
You can't rebuild your confidence if you don't go outside.
But the thing we can't say about Bob, lordy, lordy, look who's 40.
Aw, happy birthday, Bob.
Yep, he's finally 40.
Cute.
40. I think I did that.
Yeah, I remember 40 briefly, yeah. My 40s were kind of a rotten time, but my 50s so far have been awesome. So, yeah. Almost as awesome as my 20s.
My 20s had
nowhere near as awesome as Jeff's 20s, though.
Yeah, my 20s had an awful lot more nudity and illicit substances and travel and groupies.
Groupies?
I played in a band for a decade.
I know you did.
He was in a band. He was.
I don't know if you know that. I used to be pretty.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures. I still think you're pretty, though.
Aw, thanks, buddy.
You're welcome.
I'm gonna sit over
pretty
here.
Pretty long-haired redhead.
Be all pretty.
Who played guitar and sang beautifully. Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Can see the groupies flocking around.
I did well in my 20s.
Yeah. Yep. It was good times.
It was. I had a great time. All right. We should move on.
Yes. Let's kill the good times and go into the news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Sheldon Mennery, the godfather of Magic the Gathering Commander style, has passed away. Earlier last week, it was announced that that he concluded his 7-year battle with cancer. Following the announcement made on Facebook by their wife, Gretchen, Magic the Gathering fans have been sharing their support and love for Mennery. Sheldon will undoubtedly be missed by the Magic the Gathering fans all over the world. He didn't invent it, but he was its biggest champion in... when I mentioned that to a couple of Magic players this week, that he had passed away, there was some genuine emotion about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was well known in the community and was apparently a really nice guy. Now, in the
I never played Commander style because you had to have a legendary card. You have to have one legendary card in your deck, and we didn't have legendary cards at the time.
Yeah, those are way easier to get now.
Yeah, they were. They didn't exist. I don't think they existed when I was OG Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, that wasn't there yet.
Yeah, so we didn't have those. But yeah, we did play 100 deck. We did limit ourselves to 100 card decks when we play, because it's like any more than that and you're waiting for things to come out. It's like we tried it with 50 card decks. You run out of cards too quick. We tried it with 80 card decks. It still wasn't enough. So we went to 100 card and that just seemed to be just right. And it's an easy number to put together.
Yeah.
True.
Jonathan Majors has the weirdest video of the week online. A video obtained by TMZ had a video of two young women whose faces are blurred. Mm-hmm. They're punching and a tussling and a having a hair pull. Look, I'm sorry. Girl fights crack me up.
Chick fight.
Yep. And they do. Not because I want anybody to get hurt, but because girls are feral when they fight. It's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
You know?
It is.
So, the fight's going on, and then out of nowhere comes fucking Kang the Conqueror to break it up.
Sorry, just the way you said Kang the Conqueror killed me. Oh, dear.
Kang the Conqueror's like, hey, don't fight. I'm going to destroy everything anyway.
Yeah. Come on.
Anyway, Jonathan Majors, who's accused of assaulting his ex-girlfriend, even though that's starting to get weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
The paparazzi caught up with Majors. He said he didn't know the girls, but of course he wanted to step in and make sure nobody got hurt. What's your message to the girls? Weird-ass paparazzi photographer asked, because let's be honest, if there is one fucking creature in the world with no filter, it's either one of my dogs, pizza, or it's a paparazzi photographer.
Mm-hmm.
What's your message to the girls? The douchebag asked. Stay cool, said Kang the Conqueror. Stay cool.
Stay cool.
Everybody be cool. You, be cool. Best line of any Quentin Tarantino movie.
Right.
Delivered by George Clooney, the best bat chin in all of franchises. Not the best Batman. I didn't say that. Step off my door.
Best bat chin.
It's just
absolutely.
He just looks so good in a cowl, man. Have you seen the cartoon, the one with the Scottish Batman?
No.
Yeah, where he's wearing a kilt and he's got his big beard on. That's what I look like in a cowl.
That's right.
Yeah, just short, little fat Scottish guy with, and then he jumps off. You know, I am the knight, and jumps off, and he's not wearing any underpants.
I love it.
That's me. All right, Ashton fucking Kutcher. We talked about last week, where he and his missus wrote some pretty supportive letters about just what a stud Danny Masterson was and how good he is with kids and stuff. Creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
writing and you know, like we said last time, it's one thing to write a character reference for a friend who's on trial. It's another to write it after he's been convicted.
Oh, it gets better.
Oh yeah.
He has resigned from his role as a board chairman of Thorn, a nonprofit he co-founded over 10 years ago to combat child sexual exploitation. Now, we say that, and then a video, because the internet lives forever, popped up of him saying, oh yeah, Hillary Duff, she's on that list of girls we can't wait to turn 18, you know, like the Olsen twins.
Okay. I am going to, and I'm not doing this lightly. When did that video come? So the video came out, but when was that video filmed?
About 10 or so years ago.
Yeah.
So how old was Ashton Kutcher compared to Hillary Duff and the Olsen twins?
In his late 20s?
Mm-hmm.
Early 30s,
okay,
maybe?
Okay, yeah. Nope, that's still creepy. Thanks.
Yeah.
You're right. Creepy. Creepy. What? If he was like 20... and Hillary Duff is 17, then maybe.
Okay,
but
so
it's still creepy.
The irony of all that is his current wife. So when Mila Kunis was on that 70s show, she was still a teenager.
Yes, 15. She was the only one that was a teenager.
She was the only actual teenager. He was a 20, 21-year-old kid, and he did not think she was at all interesting or appealing. Because she was so young.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, he got his dirty old man way early. And I'll hit the Olsen twins as soon as they turn 20. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously just posing.
Yeah.
But it is it is as a person who is that famous and is out in the world that much and has that much fucking pull, which he does. Mm-hmm. You know, it was wildly inappropriate.
Well, and when you're, you know, it's one thing to be posing, but it's when you're posing and you're famous and they catch it on camera that, yeah, it's you're basically cancel culture bait. And he's done everything this week to, in these last couple of weeks, to make himself canceled. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he quit the board of Thorn. The decision to step down was, quote, rooted in recognition of recent events, the organization said in a statement, referencing the backlash against Kutcher and his wife Mila Kunis after they wrote letters in support of convicted rapist Danny Masterson. Quote, after my wife and I spent several days listening, personal reflection, learning, and conversations with survivors and the employees and leadership at Thorn, I have determined the responsible thing for me to do is resign as chairman of the board, effective immediately. I cannot allow my error and judgment to distract from our efforts and the children we serve. Good statement about why you're quitting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Your apology was still weird as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still weird. Anyway, there's more there, but you can read it. I'm just, I mean, there's, look at, and this is just me, you know, but you look at some of these famous women right now, like Ariana Grande, Emma Watson, et cetera, you know, and yes, they're undeniably pretty, but they still look like 12-year-olds.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe maybe we don't talk about how hard we want to bone the girls that look like children.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we stop that, because that's fucked up. But you know what's really fucked up, too?
What's that?
Drew Barrymore says...
Oh, scab!
Says she's bringing the show back. I think we talked about this a little last week.
We did.
Since then, the situation has developed.
Oh, you think? You're a WGA show, lady.
Yeah. So Drew Barrymore shows up back in production, even though both the WGA and SAG-AFTRA are still on strike. This has caused, to put it mildly, no end of hassle. Drew Barrymore released a statement indicating that she was complying with strike promotional rules, which went over like a lead brick. There's been viral tweets about audience members getting kicked out for wearing WGA pins. That happened. Barrymore was announced, then disinvited as the host of the National Book Foundation Awards. For as long as the strike goes on, there's been very little... or a fairly little noisy pushback about specific individuals who crossed the picket line. And Barrymore feels like one of the few major celebrities who got the full Game of Thrones shame bell treatment. Which, by the way, Hannah Waddingham is selling for charity for $2,600. She will follow a person of your choosing around with the bell and scream shame at them.
Nice.
That would be lovely. Can we?
Yeah,
can we right combine now. Our resources and hire her to follow Mike Lee around? Shame.
So yeah, Barrymore will not be hosting the National Book Foundation's award ceremony this year. She announced that her program would resume production on Monday without unionized writers on staff. She stated that her show will air in compliance with the strike that began in July, which prohibits actors from promoting their work. Who's going to be on her show? Is it just her and her sidekick? Who knows?
I don't know.
But the National Book Foundation released a statement on Tuesday regarding Barrymore's decision to start up her show again. And said, in light of the announcement that the Drew Barrymore show will resume production, the National Book Foundation has rescinded Ms. Barrymore's invitation to host the 74th Annual National Book Awards Ceremony.
That's interesting.
Fuck around. Find out.
What's funny about the National Book Awards uninviting her is I was just thinking that's who her guests would be authors. Because they don't have a union to say you can't promote your work. So, and now the National Book Awards is like, no, We don't take dirty scabs.
I think it's really funny when celebrities try to blur the cancel culture line. And like when like Drew Barrymore is receiving the consequences of her actions.
Yeah.
She has made this decision and this is the consequence. But I think it's interesting that she's trying to turn the story that she's being picked on. And she's the only one being picked on.
Oh, no.
That's not true.
When you
that's not true.
When you look at, for example, the behavior of the five gentlemen who host the late night talk shows and absolutely do not represent a cross section of Americana, let me say.
No.
What a white stack of guys. But you got Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, John Oliver, and Seth Meyers. They put together the Strike Force 5 podcast on the Spotify. They found sponsors for it. They do that show. John Oliver, it's been reported in the news this week, is out doing live stand-up dates to keep paying his staff. There is a way to keep paying your staff and not be a scab. And Drew Barrymore went, meh, looks hard, I'll just scab.
Right, right. And yes, there are other daytime talk shows with similar formats are coming back as well. And I'm not seeing as much chatter about those, but they also have not come back yet.
There are daytime shows coming back where they're contracted with at like a news show.
Yeah.
And right, so they can come back because WGA doesn't write for the news. Drew Barrymore is pretending she's a news show.
Right.
And right.
She's
and there
not.
Are a
she's
few
entertainment.
Other daytime talk shows not news shows that are trying to come back.
The likely thing that has occurred, the most likely thing that has occurred, if you use Occam's razor in this, she was probably told your show won't be aired anywhere if you don't come back and get working on it again by the production company that she was working with or somebody basically told her that.
I'm sure.
And made a credible threat to the point where she was like, well, I guess I got to come back because it's like, you're all these other people are going to be out of work if you don't do this. And it's like, yeah, she's going to, so she was coming back for that. She should have stood strong because she's got a huge fucking fan base and they would keep, they would force them to bring her back. Whoever
Open
they are.
Fucking GoFundMe for your fans, lady. Come on.
Exactly. Right. Do what you did in the beginning, only without your staff. You know, sit down in front of a camera and talk to people on YouTube, because her show originally started on YouTube. Just do a little bit on YouTube. Don't bring in a, you know, if you got the money to pay a cameraman and an editor and everything. But otherwise, do it so that you are, and then just keep pushing both the Patreon, a GoFundMe, everything. Get your sponsorship through YouTube. Get it all taken care of. And then before you know, everybody that can't work gets paid. There were so many options she had aside from coming back. The least surprising one coming back to me was, what's his name on HBO?
Yeah, but save that. Well, no, because we're doing that. Bill Mayer. We talked about that a bunch on the Left Show's Patreon yesterday.
Yeah.
Right. Bill Mayer's coming back. And yeah, I was not surprised at all. I was like, of course he is. He's an asshole.
He's a complete asshole. Oh, yeah. Of course he's going to come back. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one he called the writer's demands kooky.
Yeah.
He's like, you want to eat and have a place to live? That's kooky. It's like, you're just such a dick. You're a fucking libertarian now.
Yeah.
Right.
So, anyway, Drew Barrymore put out an apology video. Wow.
With no makeup on and crying.
Whatever. She says, I deeply apologize to writers. I deeply apologize to unions. Thousands of crew members have been out of work since the strike began in May and shut down production. More filming ground to a halt when SAG-AFTRA union went on strike in July. She said she wanted to make a show that was there for people in sensitive times. She repeated that she believes her show will comply with strike restrictions. and then said, there's nothing I can do to make this okay to those not okay with it. I fully accept that. Other talk shows that are planning to return, real time.
True, there is one thing you could do to make it okay to those not okay with it.
Yeah, not do it.
You could not fucking do it.
Right, right. She's sorry that everybody's mad at her.
Exactly.
Yeah, the thing with Bill Maher is he's actually a member of the WGA, the fucker.
Yeah.
He's a hardcore scab.
He is?
Yep.
Yep.
Ew. Can't they rescind his membership over that?
Oh, yeah.
If he breaks picket lines?
Oh, yeah. They will. They would do it in a heartbeat. He would use his, he'd lose his union status and his union protections and his union benefits easily. He doesn't give a shit. He's wealthy as fuck. Yep. He's not going to care.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like, you know, other guys who are wealthy, and we just talked about them, the Strike Force 5, they're all WGA members, and they're not backing, they're not crossing a picket line at all.
Right.
You know? And then you've got, like, Seth Meyer and John Oliver, and possibly Colbert. I don't know if he's done enough work, but I know at least those two have done enough work that they're also SAG-AFTRA. So, yeah, it's... They're doubled up on that one if they even tried to bring their show back. So yeah.
Yeah, Colbert does. He did Strangers with Candy. He does movies from time to time.
I guess he would have that. Yeah.
Let's see. Hasbro is celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Avengers by announcing a 24-inch tall giant man in their Legends line. It's not as tall as the Galactus Marvel Legends HasLab figure, but Giant Man will be the latest HasLab crowdfunding project where they throw it out to the public and they say, do you want it? If we get enough orders, we'll make it. This is some things have gone through, some things haven't. They had a giant Star Wars thing a few years ago. I think it was the Jabba's skiff. His big party barge. And that one, as I recall, did not go through the first time. And this one, it looks like it's going to. It's gigantic, and it's cool looking, and it's got multiple heads, and it's really cool, and it's probably stupid expensive. And
multiple heads, multiple hands. Yeah. It's got a ripped in half Ultron that you can put in his hands, like he just ripped Ultron in half.
Nice.
Yeah, it looks like fun.
It does, and it looks like something I can't afford.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he's even got a what-if Marvel Zombies face.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
That's awesome.
Very neat. I like that. Bill Willingham was like, hey, DC, step off my dick.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been trying to negotiate them on some of his creator-owned titles. And they've been giving him guff, I believe is the proper term.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has warned us that something was coming, and now he's launched a nuclear bomb declaring that he's made Fables, his beloved classic Vertigo series, public domain. In a Substack newsletter, Willingham released a statement. The short version is that he's unhappy doing business with the current purveyors of DC Comics, with complaints about editorial control and royalty payments. And in response, as part of protest, he's making Fables public domain. It debuted in 2002 from Vertigo, ran for 150 issues, becoming one of Vertigo's most successful titles ever. It spawned a dozen best-selling graphic novels, a bunch of spin-offs, all based on the idea of a fairy tale world coexisting with this one. While Fables was often optioned for media, it never did make it to the finish line, although suspiciously similar ideas like Once Upon a Time did. Anyway, it came back.
Yeah, by the way, if Once Upon a Time or what was the other one? Grimm?
Grimm.
If those weren't based on the idea, if Fables didn't inspire those, yeah. If they tell you, we weren't inspired by Fables, they're lying, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Came out of retirement in 2022 with a spinoff, Batman versus Bigby, A Wolf in Gotham, which was actually not bad, you know, especially if you like Fables. But yeah, so it was not coming out consistently. And Willingham started rumbling on Twitter about the slow pace, saying he turned in his scripts 2 years ago and is threatening to fire DC. saying, quote, in answer to far too many requests, I'm tempted to explain the delays in the issues of Fables the Black Forest, since DC refuses to do so. Short version, I handed in every script more than 2 years ago, and for multiple reasons, I haven't worked with or for DC since. I fired them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then there's a very long letter. There's a very long letter that ends thus. Ready?
Ready.
Quote, if I understand the law correctly and be advised the copyright law is a mess, purposely vague and murky and no two layers, not even those specializing in copyright and trademark law agree on anything, you have the rights to make your Fables movie and cartoons and publish your Fables books and manufacture your Fables toys and do whatever you want with my property because it's your property. Mark Buckingham is free to do his version of Fables, and I dearly hope he does. Steve Leahoa is free to do his version of Fables, which I'd love to see, and so on. You don't have to get my permission, but you might get my blessing, depending on your plans. You don't have to get DC's permission or the permission of anyone else. You never signed the same agreements I did with DC Comics. Nice.
There you go.
Time to do some Fables fanfic.
That's right.
Now, if they just public domain the Firefly universe, I actually have ideas. All right, that's it for the news, gang.
All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're talking moving pictures.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters.
Or a mother who's in between jobs
and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner.
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
There's nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are now controlling the transmission. We control the horizontal and the vertical. We can deluge you with 1,000 channels or expand one single image to crystal clarity and beyond. Please stand by.
So what have you guys been watching in the moving pictures this last week? Joss?
I had a day that it was just a day, and I just wanted to be mindless. And so I put on Gravity Falls. And if that's not the most delightful little weird, almost X-Files, but not nearly as serious show.
Oh yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. If you're ever in a bad mood, put on Gravity Falls. It's great. And then I didn't watch a ton. I did watch the Barbie movie because it's out streaming now. Not free, but it's streaming. And then I watched Ahsoka.
I'm gonna interrupt for a sec. $24.99 to rent.
Yeah.
It's $29.99 to buy.
Yeah.
And all I'm doing is looking at it going, I need to see this movie because 150 fucking people have told me that in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I don't have $25. So I am going to continue to wait. That is what I am doing. I am waiting.
Is it still playing somewhere?
Probably.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
At this point, it would be cheaper to go to a movie theater and see it than to rent it at the moment. Yeah.
True. Look, if I'm going to a movie theater, you know, I want to see like fucking Blue Beetle, or I want to see the new Mission Impossible, which is now out of theaters and I can't.
Yeah.
You know, right. I want to see. If I'm going to spend the money and the time to go sit in an uncomfortable chair, no matter how much more comfortable they are than they used to be, you know, it's I want spectacle. And with Barbie, I don't know that that's there. I hear that it is, you know, but I think we all know about my allergy to pink. not the singer, the color.
Good thing not the singer.
Oh, I know. Anyway, please continue. You were saying Ahsoka.
No, and then yes, and then I watched Ahsoka, which I figure we'll get to after we talk about everything else that you guys watched. So, yes. Jeff, what did you watch this week?
That was a really good question. This week saw the return of Premier League football after the international break last week. So I got to watch one game yesterday that had no team I gave a shit about because I wanted to actually have time to watch teams I give a shit about. So I've got more football to watch, and I'm looking forward to it. Tiffany, on the other hand, is watching American football because of her fantasy league.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on actually right now in the background. I just can't hear it because we found out that with Roku, if you use their little remote control app on your phone,
yep,
you can pull the audio to your phone.
Nice.
Yeah, it's badass. Watched Star Trek Lower Decks, which I realized that a third episode had dropped when you started talking about it. And I was like, wait a minute. I didn't say anything because you were at the end. But so I ran home and watched that, and that was good. I was very happy to do that. I watched.
Oh, my God.
It was at the end there, I was like, oh, they did do what he said.
Yeah.
And I was a little worried.
It was a moment of like, wait, okay, how do they fix this? And then, yeah, it was just fucking hilarious the way they fixed it.
Did Dennis Quaid piss someone off?
Yeah. Oh, it was fucking brilliant,
though. It was really good. It was a good episode.
Oh, my God. I laughed so hard in that with that episode of Lower Decks. Yeah. Oh, my God.
What else? Welcome to Wrexham. Just got back this week.
Yes.
So I watched the hell out of that. For 36 minutes. I was able for the most part to binge season one, and there was only a couple of episodes left to come out, and they're, you know, and so appointment television for me is difficult with half an hour stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm going to do appointment, my brain wants an hour. I don't know why. It doesn't make sense. There's no logical reason to it. It's just what makes my brain happy, which, like I said, is a fucking mystery most days. So I just want longer. And it was nice that Ahsoka, which I also watched, was longer this week. Yes. Finally, Dave Filoni. hey, look, I'm paying a monthly fee for this shit. Give me an hour.
Yeah.
And then Foundation on Apple TV, based on the Isaac Asimov novels. Season two, still wacky, but better. Still good. I mean, it was just it's amazing. There is nothing like this show on TV right now. And Jared Harris is amazing, and Lee Pace is amazing, and all of these different fucking actors I've never heard of, and so I don't know their names are amazing. Remember the Grandmaster's sidekick, the New Zealand lady.
Yeah.
It's like what do I call her? What do I call her? It starts with a B. Trash. Were you just waiting to say that? That's the lady, the trash lady. she's been in it several episodes in season two, and she is goddamn terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's terrifying in the way Kai Winn was terrifying, you know?
Oh, I like that. Yeah. The
benevolent evil. Foundation has been quite tasty over there. I'm probably going to pick up another one of those. I think when I'm done with this is Invasion. Also looks good. They don't have a lot over on the Apple TV, but they got Ted Lasso and they got some cool ass sci-fi. So anyway, that's what I got. What about you, buddy?
Let's see. So I did watch Welcome to Wrexham, which was so delightful. Getting to meet the king. I don't know. He wasn't coronated yet, but I don't remember if he was king at that point based upon when that would have been filmed. I don't know for sure. But that was fun. Reservation Dogs. So everything that's been culminating this season finally came together, and that was really fun. I don't know how many episodes I got left. And I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I already said I laughed my ass off at Lower Decks and was shocked by the ending and then laughed even harder with the solution to what shocked me. it was a return to form in a lot of ways with Lower Decks. We've had some softer episodes. This one was just flat out, let's just pull everything out and do it. And we got to see the game from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Alla Moraine, count to four. Yeah. Which made me laugh so hard.
So many levels of funny. And we only had to spend a little bit of time in the game. Yeah. Because, and I will say this, and I wish Pat were here to argue with me on it. Mm-hmm. That is, without a doubt, one of the top five worst episodes of Voyager. Or Deep Space Nine.
Oh, no, it is. It is, in my opinion, it is the worst episode of Voyager, or of DS9, absolutely.
Holy shit.
I'm a huge DS9 fan, and I still get a kick out of Major Kira having to do the Alla Moraine hopscotch thing. Because the way Nana Visitor played her at that time when that episode aired, she was so fucking serious about everything. And her having to do it, just the look on her face, the eye rolls and everything was so fucking... I'm like, this made... It was like your George Clooney moment at the end of The Flash. Yeah. This was that moment where I was like, that just made that episode work for me. That. The rest of it's terrible. I hate this episode. That little moment there, I can say, that's fun. That was funny. But yeah, you know, as of course, everybody knows how to win the game. So, you know, he just goes through and wins the game in no time. And it was just hilarious. There was a little bit that everybody was like, is this what it is? Was that right? And that's when he's sitting on this thing and there's a probe that falls on the guy's bed when he gets out of the, when he pops out of the game. This probe, it falls from the ceiling, lands on the guy's bed and sets itself off. And it's not quite the probe from Inner Light, but it must have been the probe from Inner Light. So because of what the little box said when he was done. But yeah, it was fucking hilarious. Yeah, all the way through. And then, of course, Ahsoka. Let's talk about Ahsoka. It was really cool to see stuff from Clone Wars live action, even though they were little things. They weren't very long.
The Siege of Mandalore.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was badass.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And to see them age Ahsoka, because she would have gotten older as the, you know, as the Clone Wars continued. It was absolutely brilliant. And Hayden Christensen was wonderful in it.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah. I enjoyed him and you know, like I said, he was misserved by a shitty scripts and mm-hmm. a shitty director.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know.
So last episode, it ended with us seeing Hayden Christensen, and the internet went nuts. I said the de-aging doesn't work. Why are you de-aging him? You didn't need to de-age him. Then I finally see this episode where he's actually involved, and I'm like, oh, never mind. I rescind my comment. The de-aging was appropriate because it's, you know, her seeing him as she remembers him. He's not really being a Force ghost, you know.
right.
Yeah. Yes, he is a Force ghost, and yes, he can haunt her. But at the same time, this was more to do with Ahsoka than with him. So if that makes sense. So it was, you know, him seeing him. When she knew him as a young Padawan, when he was her master, to, you know, when she left him and was just a soldier and a general in the Clone Wars. I mean, she escaped the whole thing because her crew were the ones known as the Bad Batch, her crew of clones. And so when Order 66 came through, they were able to just shake it off and go, we're not killing Ahsoka. That's why she survived Order 66.
Nobody murders Rosario Dawson.
Exactly.
Right?
Kill all Jedi except the hot ones.
Mm-hmm. See, it was fun because the clone who came up, who ran past her and said, let's go in the Battle of Mandalore. I'm like, hey, that would have been Cody, right? I'm asking Angus. He goes, oh, yeah, that has to be Cody. So that was cool because Cody was a major character in the Bad Batch group and everything. So
there was a meme I saw because they found her unconscious or whatever. And they took her little headband off that separates the color of her head stuff from her face stuff.
Right.
And it looked really, I mean, it looked really good, you know, it was all that. Mm-hmm. And
well blended, yes.
Oh, so well blended. But somebody posted a picture of her not wearing the headband and was like, are we going to talk about this week's nude scene or not?
Everything with Hera was awesome in it, by the way, and with them having to fight, you know, basically tell the Alliance, no, back off. And then when the space whales start coming up, they're like, evasive maneuvers.
Right.
Like, I'm like, yeah, they're not breaking for anyone, kid. That's all there is to it. So, and what a solution, flying in the mouth of a space whale. Going into hyperspace in the mouth of a space whale.
I'd do it.
Yep.
What a solution. And he even kept his mouth a little bit open just so they could see out. I was like, wow, what a great space whale. Yeah.
Oh. No, it was, I don't know. You said it all. It was so good. It was just so much fun. It was, mm-hmm. It just felt good. I don't know. I just like Star Wars, you guys. I just like getting new good Star Wars. And even when the prequels came out, at the time, we were all just thrilled to have new Star Wars.
Well, some of us.
Well, I mean, we were willing to overlook the flaws than we are now.
I went to the Friday premiere of the first of Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. The cheers when it said...
long time ago.
When it said Lucasfilm.
Ah.
The cheers when it said Lucasfilm, and then a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, again, big cheers.
The
whole time. We were really excited for it. And when the movie ended, we're like,
what?
Okay, that was a different ending, but we know where all this goes. We know where all this fits in, because we know who Palpatine is. We know who all this stuff is. We know what all this stuff is. And honestly, I could tell you I was not disappointed. I certainly didn't put Phantom Menace up with Empire Strikes Back, but I definitely put it above Jedi. I was like, I like seeing the Jedi fighting in the way that they should be able to fight with the Force and the speed that they're able to move, because that does not exist in standard, you know, in the regular Star Wars films, the original Star Wars films. And, so I wasn't just as disappointed in it until I saw Send In the Clones. I mean, Attack of the Clones. and then I was like, you know, if I had to hear, you know, the whole thing with all the scenes with Anakin and the bad dialogue and everything there, just, and the fact that the way they were inserted in kept slowing the movie down. It made it feel, it made it feel like a 4-hour movie for being a less than 2-hour movie. Yeah. All of it. It was bad filmmaking, bad... the only thing great in it was the special effects, obviously.
I'm in love with you. You can't be in love with me. Stop thinking about me that way. Here, wait a sec. I got to put on a dominatrix outfit. Stop thinking of me that way.
Exactly.
Hang on a sec. I got to put on some see-through lace. Stop staring beneath the lace. Jedi.
Now tell me how you feel about sand. Yeah, all that, all the way through. And it was just such, yeah. And so that point, you go back and you watch Phantom Menace, and now you see the chinks, you know, you see the flaws.
Right.
All the way through it. You see the flaws in the writing, the flaws in the filmmaking. The first, I would say, the first airing of it before Send In the Clones came out, I was like, this, it's a good movie. And then now I went back and looked at it. I was like, not a good movie. Not a good movie.
Fair.
Send In the Clones only made it that much worse. And yes, I'm intentionally saying it that way. I can't remember who called us out on how we were saying Ahsoka 1 week, but I'm intentionally saying it that way.
It was Jeff. That was. And yeah. I'd say it weird because I say everything weird. That's
right. Yeah, that's right. It was Dumas. Yeah, no, I'm intentionally saying it that way. It was Send In the Clones, as in Send In the Clowns. Yeah.
But, you know, I have a high forgiveness factor for a lot of stuff. I've watched the prequels several times.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've watched them many times, yeah.
I'm never going to like Jar Jar. You know, even though I have advocated for people to stop being a dick to the actor, same with Hayden Christensen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all of that was George Lucas's fault, folks. You know, so, but if you like him, hey, that's on you. Please enjoy. Please do enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't, but I am certainly not going to, you know, it's not like Sister Wives. It's not like it's a mental condition to watch it.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, Lord. Seriously, you guys, the what the fuck body language I just got from across the room was pretty strong. I just, every time people watch that show, that douchebag husband makes money, and I just want people to stop watching it. You know?
I don't disagree with you.
Yes.
I've never watched it, so.
It's just, it's a bad haircut treating women poorly. That's all it is. So anyway.
It really is.
So anyway, that's some good TV. Yeah.
So that's what we watched. Let's do some Tinseltown news.
All right. Hey, remember when I told you about that sound effect thing you guys won't be able to hear?
Yeah.
Here comes one.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's very important. Hang on a sec. Here it goes. Breaking news. We have breaking news. Yeah, that's enough of that. Okay, breaking news. Drew Barrymore. Yep.
Halts, what should he do now?
Halts her talk show return.
Oh!
After backlash, will resume when strike ends.
Wow. Well done, Drew.
Yeah?
Does that mean I can have a crush on Drew Barrymore again?
Yeah. I think it does. I think it means that I can forgive her. Oh,
Don't get me wrong.
We watched The Wedding Singer this week, too.
I'm talking about 1990s Drew Barrymore.
When I say we watched it, I mean it was on and I fell asleep. But
fair.
It's still
no, it was, it was, this is so refreshing. Thank you. Whoever was the voice of reason that we were trying to be in the last segment that got to Drew and said, look, there are a billion different ways you can keep your crew working, you know, keep your crew employed, and you can keep your fans happy so that you don't lose your show. And we were just spitballing a few of them in the last segment. And now she's like, oh, no, I'm going to halt it until the strike's over. Yep.
She says, I have listened to everyone and I am making the decision to pause the show's premiere until the strike is over. I have no words to or express my deepest apologies to anyone I've hurt. And of course, to our incredible team that works on the show and has made it what it is today. We really tried to find our way forward, and I truly hope for a resolution for the entire industry very soon. Meanwhile, I do believe Bill Maher came out with a statement to paraphrase, quote, I'm an asshole, end quote.
Yes, yeah. End quote.
Captain America actor Chris Evans, you know, America's ass.
That's right.
Wait, I need a tissue. All right, say it.
Too many punchlines. Got married in a surprise wedding with his partner, Alba Baptista. She is hot.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's the breaking news. Chris Evans, he landed himself a hot one. What are the odds, rich, handsome, charismatic?
Yeah.
America's
ass. And she's
ass.
Also like 20 years younger than he is or something.
What did we come up with? 16?
Is that what it is?
I think it's 16 years difference, which... so there's a rule that you give. It's a little sexist, but it's a rule you give dudes to say, especially old guys who are dating young girls, if you want to have a conversation with her, with your girl, that you can actually relate to one another, you need to go half your age plus 7. So he makes that, he's in that range.
Hang on. 32. I can go as young as 32?
Yeah.
Without being creepy?
Without, I'm not going to say you're not creepy. Yeah, I'm not going to say you're not creepy with a 32-year-old, but at least you would be able to have a conversation and not be completely on different
planes of existence.
Planes of existence when it comes to your life experiences.
Let me tell you something right now, folks.
Mm-hmm.
I am 11 years removed from the age of my life partner over here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hey, babe. And no, we find very little common ground in conversations having to do with anything other than things that happen to us.
Yes.
When it comes to pop culture stuff, like we did it, I mean, just last night in the car, she started to spout off a bunch of cartoons I had never seen before in my life.
Oh.
Strawberry Shortcake. Well, like that.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how it came up, but I was talking about how things from my youth are pretty fucking awful and that I wallow in nostalgia with some pretty bad media.
Mm-hmm.
Go back. Watch Battle of the Planets. Watch.
Oh, I can't.
Nope. It's terrible. And yet that's how I drew spaceships for 10 years.
Oh no, I named any character I was creating in my, you know, for my comic book youth, every character I created, their name was either Mark or Jason.
Yeah, you know? Or Princess.
Because those were the only two cool names in the world, as far as I was concerned, Mark and Jason. And I was able to get some DVDs of Battle of the Planets that also included at least one episode of Science Ninja Team Gatchaman, which is where this came from.
Yep.
I need to get the Science Ninja Team Gatchaman collector's set because that's so much better than what Battle of the Planets was. Because what they did was they cut out all the violence and all the other stuff and then added in this Seven Zark Seven, which at the time I didn't notice the animation was that different. Oh, no, it's way different. So, yeah, no, Battle of the Planets, terrible show. But Science Ninja Team Gatchaman, because I've seen that now, I'm like, I can't watch Battle of the Planets. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so Chris Evans got married.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of gap in age, but I don't find it. She doesn't look like a child.
No, she doesn't. But...
Well, you know, you were mentioning Ariana Grande in the last segment. And I was like, yeah, we were watching, my daughter was into some of those Nickelodeon shows that she was on. And I remember watching going, God, what a talented little 14-year-old she was. And she's like, you know, this was only a couple of years ago. So when she was dating Pete Davidson, I'm like, keep your filthy hands off that little girl, Pete Davidson.
Yeah, I think she was older than him.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. And yet she does not look it. No.
So recently I have had occasion to watch both Band of Brothers and The Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
Both came from the Spielberg Hanks team, and it looks like they're putting out a third sequel or a third show to follow into the World War II universe they've created, based on a true story. So they're doing one called Masters of the Air about the air war in World War II. It reminds me of a joke. So,
oh, dear.
A Russian tank general and an American tank general are standing outside the German surrender ceremony, you know, just talking about the war and this and that and the other. And as they're about to part ways, the American general's like, ooh, wait, who won the air war? Ba-dum-bum. So if you're a ground pounder, you'll think that was funny. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Masters of the Air is breaking a major Band of Brothers tradition in, as far as I can tell, in this really wordy thing that didn't need to be this wordy. Instead of HBO, it's going to be over on Apple TV.
Oh.
Yep. There you go.
Okay.
So yeah, Masters of the Air, the sequel to Band of Brothers in the Pacific, will be streamed exclusively on Apple TV. Concerns about platform differences, Master of the Air still has a built-in audience and a talented team behind it, including Spielberg, Hanks, and Goetzman. The show's success on Apple TV may be affected by its release on Fridays rather than occupying the coveted Sunday night time slot on HBO. I'm happy it's coming out on Friday. It gives me something to watch on Saturday.
There There you go.
But I will be watching the shit out of this because I love World War II. Always have. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a little preferential to Vietnam because it happened in my lifetime, but World War II is pretty cool. So looking forward to that. Marvel, this is the dumbest fucking story of the week. This is more pointless than a bag full of severed testicles. So what do you do with a bag of severed testicles? I don't know.
Nothing. I don't know.
I mean, call the cops.
Yeah, call the cops. I mean, are they human testicles or, you know, because if they're animal testicles, there are people who cook those up and eat them. So
it's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, in the Spider-Man No Way Home, the art of the movie art book, Ryan Minerding. Wow, how was elementary school for Ryan? Jesus, sorry, dude.
Not great.
Yeah. Oh, sorry to hear about your Minerding. anyway, he's the head of the Marvel Studios visual department. He calls the MCU Spider-Man trilogy the Home Trilogy.
Oh, really?
I apologize for wasting everyone's time with that story, but it went on for nine more paragraphs. Yeah, it went on for nine more paragraphs after that. And that was the fourth paragraph.
I know. I'm like, this is a dumb moment. And I went reading it. I'm going, where's he going to say it? Oh, we got to go through like several images and then finally get to paragraph four. And there's where he says it. I'm like, oh my God. Dumb.
Donald Glover's Lando is no longer going to be a series. It's going to be a feature film. I hope they bring back the kid that played Han Solo. I liked him.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, it would be nice to maybe do that. Maybe do a trilogy. You got a Solo, you got a Lando, you got a Chewbacca. Just, you know, do the three of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that went on for another bunch of paragraphs. It didn't need to. Warner Brothers chief financial officer thinks you deadbeats have been on a free ride way too long. Warner Brothers Discovery's coming off a high of its massive box office success from Barbie, but that's never enough. It's your fault things are not going as well as they should be. You've had it good for far too long. All that content you've been paying for has been granted to you too cheaply. Prices have to rise. These multi-million dollar paycheck motherfuckers,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right?
And again, this is, I worked professionally in politics for 20 plus years. Talking about people buying yachts in third and fourth homes has always felt troped and cliched to me as a speechwriter, mm-hmm. as a press release writer. And yet here we are watching these guys fucking caricaturize their own snidely whiplash caricatures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meh.
They all want to be some version of Scrooge McDuck, basically swimming in their millions. You know, yeah.
Obviously, one of my favorite Family Guy moments where they do a flash to him diving into a room full of gold,
and yes. like
had him hitting a sidewalk, and it was all busted up and broken. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's it for the news, gang.
All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're talking comics.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
Let's do some comic book news.
Comic book news. Vault is sharing some good news today. Huge order numbers for Unnatural number one. Unnatural order number one. They broke the $100,000 mark, or the 100,000 copy mark, with an order of over 137,000 copies when the final order cutoff came through.
Hmm.
That's wow. pretty big. Last month, publisher did something a little different than traditional comic book sales model by making the first issue completely free to retailers. For $4.99 cover price, the book's launch could lead to a financial windfall. It's not going to be a financial windfall. I'm going to sell 10 copies of this goddamn thing. Yeesh, financial windfall. The results are in, and Vault has established a completely new model for launching titles. This is great. Either one of the things that retailers want is either, well, I don't think I've ever asked for anything for free. All I want is a returnability on number one, with my FOC for number two to come a week after number one drops, so that we can see if it's something people like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all. What we have to do is we order a shitload of number ones. We have to order a number two before number one even comes out. And that's when you're walking in a comic book shop and you see stacks, you know, for just certain titles. It's mm-hmm. because we got screwed with the number one to number two order. So there's very few right. things that retailers really ask for. Like, hey, Marvel, when you have a series coming out, don't kill off the character. Shit like that. You know, and on this one, we want returnability. We're not being all that whiny, I don't think. But, yeah, so this is actually pretty cool. You know, and it was more than one cover mm-hmm. for free as well. So I'm looking forward to it. I know we got some mm-hmm. coming in.
Let's hope it does well. That's all I'm saying. I want them to be successful, because their success means success across the board for any independent creator, plus all the comic book shops. Yep. So yeah, please be successful.
It's
yeah.
a gamble, but mm-hmm. I appreciate it. I like that they're trying new shit. Between that mm-hmm. and Night Terrors, I've seen some positive mm-hmm. changes this year. There's still too many negatives, but we have seen some. If they could just figure out how to ship me shit in a week,
mm-hmm.
that would thrill me. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Daredevil crossover will happen, says Kevin Eastman.
They've crossed over with Batman. Why not Daredevil?
they've done Batman, the fucking Power Rangers, Godzilla.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll read it. You know I will, so I just don't know.
Yep. But yeah, TMNT does not exist without Daredevil, because mm-hmm. they were making fun of Daredevil when Eastman and Laird created the Turtles.
Yeah, because at that point, his biggest enemy was the Hand, the ninja, mm-hmm. the ninja's the Hand. And so what did they name their ninja, their evil ninjas? The Foot.
The Foot.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way, are you ready, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 40 years old. 40 years old.
40?
40.
I guess it is 40.
Yeah.
I thought it was older, like 45.
I thought it was newer. Because it's always like, oh, yeah, that was about 10, 15 years ago.
When I was 16, I did a production, a community theater production of The Bad Seed, which is a wonderful little horror play about a little girl who murders people. So wholesome and family friendly.
It sounds like it.
Anyway, the two of the actors who were in it with me, much older than me, you know, or well, I don't know if they were much older than me. They were at least, I think they were both at least 10 years older than me, were comic book fans. And they introduced me to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I finally made it to a comic book shop, went down to the comic book shop and finally got my first copy of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And that was when I was 16. So, yeah. I was like, I guess 40 is about right for how long press time would have taken to get it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Louise Simonson and June Brigman are reuniting for Power Pack, a 40th anniversary miniseries. Back in 1984, Simonson and Brigman Brigman.
Mm-hmm.
That was elementary school for June.
Mm-hmm.
Introduced the Power Pack, a superhero team consisting of four young siblings, with the debut of their ongoing series. The title lasted 62 issues, and the characters have become fan favorites, appearing in various corners of the Marvel Universe over the years. In celebration of the team's 40th anniversary, from the primordial ooze of the New York sewer... No, I'm thinking of something else 40 years old. Marvel has announced that Simonson and Brigman are returning for Power Pack Into the Storm, a new five-issue miniseries in January of 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of other news about it.
My buddy Charlie was at the... Charlie McKelvey, who writes Spider-Squirrel. He was at the Baltimore Comic-Con a week ago. And they met the Simonsons, Louise and Walt. I mean, you know, comic book legends as far as anyone's concerned.
Oh yeah.
And they got friendly with them, you know, hung out with them for a minute. And they said the next night they went to get some dinner at a sushi restaurant. And in the booth next to him was Walt and Louise. So he just reached over and tapped Walt on the shoulder and asked if he could borrow his chopsticks. And Walt turned around and he's like, "Are you stalking me?" And he kind of leaned around, looked around the booth. He goes, "You know, if it wasn't for your wife, I would kick your ass right now." It's because Charlie's wife is ridiculously hot. So, yeah, it was just funny. It was, and they basically, yeah, the whole weekend, it was like hanging out with the old school. And I'm like, I want to go to Baltimore Comic Con. God damn it.
This looks like fun.
It looks like, because all the old school guys go there. And Wheezy was there the whole time. Yeah.
Dark Horse will be collecting Richard Corbin's Hellboy stories in a new hardcover. It'll be 300 pages of essential Hellboy stories. Legendary comic creator Richard Corbin passed away at the age of 80 last year, back in 2020, following heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
He began his writing career as illustrating, doing horror and science fiction stories like Creepy, Eerie, and Vampirella.
Mm-hmm.
He did a bunch of Hellboy one-shots and a miniseries. He drew in collaboration with Mignola, most notably Hellboy the Crooked Man, which serves as the basis for the upcoming film reboot.
That'd be
the
nice.
Second one? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Richard Corbin has a very unique and very specific art style, and I am in love with it for some reason. And every time I see something by Richard Corbin, it's like, ooh, that looks awesome. I want to own that.
Yeah, Mignola says, Corbin was a genius. I was a fan from the very first moment I saw his work in Heavy Metal magazine way back when.
Oh, yeah.
I never in a million years thought I'd get a chance to work with him, but I did, and it remains a highlight of my career. I wrote The Crooked Man specifically for him, and it remains my favorite Hellboy story. So that'll be cool.
Mm-hmm.
I forget how much I like Hellboy comics until I just pick one up because I got them in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and most of what I've read, I've only read a little bit of Corbin, but I've mostly read Mignola. But, you know, I like Hellboy. It's mm-hmm. earnest. It's dark. It's deep. You know, it's got a lot of good themes in it, too. So,
yep.
Coming back in 2024, the Batman and Scooby-Doo mysteries.
Woo-woo!
Yep, just wrapped up a 12-issue run last week. It's a story in which the Mystery Inc. gang gets Futurama'd into the world of Batman Beyond.
Oh, boy. That sounds like fun.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a coming back. It's a getting closer. Going faster.
Like a roller coaster?
No, than a teenager in a car. I don't.
Okay.
I wasn't trying to rhyme. Marvel is confirming that Chris Claremont will be back writing Wolverine for a new series.
Yes.
Coming back next spring to celebrate 50 years of Wolverine. I need to go lay down.
You can't do that when I'm taking a drink of coffee.
Fuck.
Yep. Me. That was, 1974, 1975, first appearance of Wolverine in The Incredible Hulk.
Yep.
Snicket.
Yep. So anyway, the series teams Wolverine with Black Widow and Captain America. evoking a 1990 story by Claremont in which the three appeared in an iconic Jim Lee cover and were billed as together again for the first time.
That's the one that I won my... that was the book where I wound up winning my no prize because of that, because somebody asked about that particular story where she, they met...
Oh, Black Widow.
They met Black Widow as a little girl in World War II. And he's like, how does this work? The guy writing in was like, well, how do you explain all this? And my comment was, you just had a secret war where everything was reset. That's the explanation to me, is that everything was reset by the secret war. And the editor said, you've won a no prize.
Yeah. Hard to believe, bub. But I've known Logan for 50 years, said Cress Claremont in a statement. And Natasha was in the first Marvel story I ever wrote. This trip back to Madripoor reveals hidden truths about two of my favorite characters on the adventures that shape their lives.
Meanwhile, fix the continuity problem there, Chris. Please fix the continuity problem.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, Chris Evans is like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
I'm America's ass. But that's it for the news, gang.
So what have you guys been reading this week? We'll start with Joss.
Yeah, start with me, because I chose baseball over comic books this week. It's the championship, though.
It's always the case, man. We always get run over by the sports. By the sports
only championship series time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I do have my Daredevils, and I do have a chunk of time today after we record. Because somehow we don't have anything going on today in our lives, which is awesome. So I'm going to hole up with some comic books. So next week, you guys, next week.
Next week.
Next week. How about you, Jeff? What'd you read?
Batman, Gargoyle of Gotham. That was good. I'm looking forward to this. These Black Label Batman stories are fucking great. I don't care. They've got great writers. They've got great artists. This is, Lopez drawing and Grandpa writing.
Mm-hmm.
That was good right there. And then Alligator Loki.
Of course, Peter.
Did not suck.
No. Okay.
Yeah, I liked it. It sold very well this week. But if you don't have it in your hold yet, I would absolutely order it before issue number two comes out, because it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So that's what I read. So what did you read this week?
Let's see. I got Star Trek Picard's Academy, number one. Not totally in love with the art style, but that's more of my personal taste than anything wrong with the art. The art's fine. It's just I don't care for that art style. That's all. And then I had trouble hearing Picard's voice, you know, when he would speak. But the basic premise is that Jean-Luc Picard's in his second year at Starfleet Academy, and he wants out. He wants to graduate early and just get into space because he's tired of all this nonsense. He hasn't really made any friends except for Boothby the groundskeeper, and he just wants to get out. And the trope is that he's going to wind up in a team competition where he'll have to learn to work with other people, and that's what will turn him around to stay at the Academy. The irony is, here's a guy who wanted to leave the Academy after 2 years, but when you watch Next Generation, how he just talks about his days at the Academy and how important the Academy was and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, wow, this is not the Picard I'm used to seeing, which is why I had trouble finding his voice, is because that's not the Picard I'm used to. So, Danger Street number 9. So I've been reading this Danger Street by Tom King and Fornes. And, it's a really surreal, really cool story. It has multiple characters all the way through. In this one issue, it's just the entire issue is this fight between Manhunter and this other guy. Manhunter is out to kill the last of this group of bad guys who hired this other guy to protect them, to protect him. And they're up on this roof fighting. The entire fight, they're having this really deep philosophical conversation to the level of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Nice.
That's what it felt like reading it. Every page is 9 panels. So it feels like Watchmen, where every page was 9 panels. every page is 9 panels. Every panel is just stuffed with these guys just having this philosophical conversation. It was awesome. And it was a good long read. And like I said, the whole time I'm thinking, this reminds me of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, just the level of conversation they're having. It was really cool. And there's a point where a coin toss comes into it, and I'm like, yeah, now I'm really feeling the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Werewolf by Night. This is kind of a one-shot that came out from Derek Landy and Frank Gallen. What's his name? The werewolf. He's got to go. Jack Russell. That's right. That's always funny to me when you think about a Jack Russell Terrier. So Jack Russell is there's this girl who was kidnapped by this evil guy that he used to deal with back in the 70s in his original book. He's got to get to her before he transforms her into some monster. Meanwhile, Elsa Bloodstone is also on the same trail. And so they wind up meeting up together inside the castle, fight their way to him, and then have to fight their way through what he has done. And it's just, it's fun. It's good. You the only thing missing from this would be Man-Thing. Ted, as we call him now, thanks to the Werewolf by Night piece. But if you got somebody who's a, they were like, I really love that Werewolf by Night, which is, by the way, right now running also on Hulu, not just on Disney. They're like, I really like that Werewolf by Night. Okay. Check this one out. Cause this is the original characters. Like Elsa talks about, I'm a redhead and I wear orange. I'm not subtle, you know, and it's just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
By the way, a little bit of breaking rumor, a re-release of Werewolf by Night, the movie that we saw last year, I think it was last year. Yeah. They're putting it out again. This Halloween in color. I don't know how I feel about that, but I will definitely watch it.
I'll watch it. I want to see what that looks like. I mean, obviously it was shot in color and then desaturated, so the actual cut of the film should exist in color. That would be interesting to see it.
Yep.
And then finally, Avengers Incorporated, number one by Al Ewing. So by the time I got to the end of this book, I wish I had read his Ant-Man miniseries. I didn't read his Ant-Man miniseries. The Wasp miniseries is also touched upon in this. So this is a sequel, basically, to those two miniseries by Al Ewing. Janet winds up on the raft, the maximum security prison for supervillains, because her greatest nemesis... throughout her career, Whirlwind has been killed. Now, Whirlwind was more than just her nemesis. He was also her stalker, like a serious stalker for years. And he has been killed. And not just him, though. 5 other supervillains on the raft were all killed. And they all have what looks like a small caliber gunshot wound to the head. Problem is that all their wounds are diamond-shaped. And... she gets in there. She looks at it. She's like, yeah, there's no, she shrinks down, goes and looks at the wound up close. She's like, there's no burns. There's no, you know, powder residue. There's nothing. This wasn't caused by a bullet. And then all of a sudden all the corpses wake up and they're like, what the fuck just happened? But Whirlwind is not Whirlwind. In fact, his face muscles change. So he doesn't look the same. Like, His whole demeanor changes, and he seems to have the power of the Vision. And then he calls himself Victor Shade, which was the Vision's civilian identity. And with that diamond scar, you know, diamond hole right in his forehead, and it's glowing red, and his eyes are glowing red, it's like, huh, what is this about? And we get to the end, and we find out who kind of perpetrated this attack. And I'm like, yeah, I wish I'd read the Ant-Man series. So it looks really interesting. I'm really excited to read this. Meanwhile, this has turned into Janet wound up working for Luke Cage, the mayor of New York City, as you know.
Yes.
New York has a very strict no vigilante rule going on, unless you're sanctioned. So no unsanctioned vigilante activity. So for Janet, she can't wear costumes. Fortunately, she has got an entire wardrobe that she calls Wardrobe Zero, which is all treated with, you know, all made from unstable molecules and treated in such a way that it shrinks with her when she uses her shrinking power. So basically, Jan will be fighting in civilian clothes this whole time, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
She has a wonderful sense of fashion.
Yes. Oh, there's this great line of she tells Jarvis, we'll need to activate Wardrobe Zeros. They're several years out of fashion. And she said, style never goes out of fashion, Jarvis. And I'm like, huh, was this drawn like 3 or 4 years ago? And you had to insert that line to say, you know, women don't really dress like this anymore. It's delightful. Just a delightful little run. And I don't know how long it's going to run. I just liked it. Really good artwork, really good story. And basically she and Victor Shade are going to wind up plainclothes detectives working for Luke Cage, you know, private eyes working for Luke Cage while they solve the mystery of what the hell happened. And meanwhile, Victor, her partner now, Victor Shade, is wearing the body of her stalker. That's going to be a problem at some point. It has to be. If Al Ewing glosses over that, I'm going to be pissed, because that should be a problem for her. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm trepidatious about that, but I know Al Ewing, and I think he'll make that work. Yeah, it looks like fun. Like I said, I hope he doesn't gloss over it, because it's a big deal. But today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. It's time to give our picks of the week and our picks of the future.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
Just start us out. What are you looking forward to?
I am going to pick up a DC title, which is a little unusual, but not necessarily shocking when I tell you it's Wonder Woman number one. So, you know, I do love Wonder Woman. And when I found out that it was Tom King writing this one, I went, yep. That's going right in the hold. So I'm going to grab Wonder Woman number one from Tom King. It's a new era for the Amazon warrior. A mysterious Amazonian is accused of mass murder. Congress passes the Amazon Safety Act, barring all Amazons from U.S. soil. So Wonder Woman is going to find herself an outlaw in the world she once swore to protect. Yeah, Tom King, I don't think we can go wrong there.
The first four pages of the comic have been in the last four pages of every DC comic that came out this week.
Oh.
And so I've read that, and I see why they're banning Amazons from ever being in the United States. It's intense, and it's just Tom King at his finest. Right up there with basically doing Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in a fight between two C-level or I'd probably say Z-level characters in DC Comics. Yeah.
Right.
Brilliant.
Nice. So, and then also, I am going to pick up a Marvel comic number one as well. Again, because the writer is someone I like. J. Michael Straczynski is writing Captain America these days.
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't really want to go through the entire preview for it, because we all know who Captain America is, and we'll just read it and enjoy it, I'm sure. So,
Johnny knowing Storm. The way Straczynski's written all the different things he's written for Marvel,
right?
This should be a return to form for Captain America. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that should be really, really good. I'm excited for both of those. Jeff, what are your. Oh, and then my future mainstream pick. And this one is definitely all 100% the writer. It's Howard the Duck, because Chip Zdarsky is going to be writing Howard the Duck. And I have to. Mm-hmm. I it's been in his newsletter, and I've got to pick that one up. Just have to.
Yep.
So, all right, Jeff, what's your mainstream picks?
Well, okay. So DC, Batman One Dark Night, is coming out this week. in trade. It's another one of the Black Label series. It's fucking awesome. It's basically a new bad guy we've never heard of with electricity powers. Basically, he just sucks all the electricity out of Gotham while he's being transferred from one place to another, and bad things happen. It was very, very good. I am also, for my pick from Marvel, picking a DC title. Wonder Woman number one, written by Tom King. Pause for a moment while I read you the description. No, I'm not. I'm not going to. My mainstream picks of the future, which are coming up quickly on FOC, so get those ordered into your holds as soon as you can. Batman Offworld number one, where Batman gets transported off of Earth to apparently an alien planet or some shit, where bad things are going down and has to Batman it. But not on Earth. And then I will also join you in the future. In the future. With Howard the Duck number one, because of Chip Zdarsky.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
So that's where I'm at. What about you, sir?
For me this week, look forward to Wolverine number 37. Jumping on point, by the way, for those who are interested in starting to read Wolverine. Wolverine is going to do a grand tour of the Marvel Universe. And the first Marvel Universe denizen he's going to hook up, he's going to meet up with and fight, of course, is the Hulk. So
well,
why not?
Of course.
Got to have the Hulk. Meanwhile, Wolverine's hunting down his last three clones because there can be only one.
Good.
So he's hunting down his last three clones and meanwhile getting in with the Marvel Universe. Meanwhile, he's also a hunted man because he's probably one of the most high-profile mutants in the Marvel Universe, and the mutants are being hunted right now. From DC Comics, we've got Green Lantern War Journal number one. This is Jon Stewart returning for a brand new series as a Green Lantern. And that's what I want. I love Jon Stewart. I think he's probably my favorite Green Lantern. And even though everything I've got is like Hal Jordan, Hal Jordan, Hal Jordan, I've always loved Jon Stewart, and this looks really cool. I'm excited to see what this comes out as. And then my future pick from Marvel Comics, we get a new Marvel Voices. In celebration of the 60th anniversary of the Avengers, we get Marvel Voices Avengers number one. This is four stories involving the Avengers, basically. From all new artists, all new writers and artists. So this looks really cool. Yeah. Looking forward to this one. And then my independent picks, starting with, we talked about this when the news article broke about it almost a year ago, I'd say. Boom Studios finally releasing Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-5. By Ryan North and Scott Newman. And this is basically the novel, the great Kurt Vonnegut novel, Slaughterhouse-5, adapted into graphic novel format.
This will also be joining our banned book section.
Yes.
Over at the Dr. Volts.
Nice.
And this is, I mean, we saw they showed some previews of the artwork when they were working on it, and this looks awesome. I cannot wait to read this one. And from Scout Comics, Mom Breaks the Internet number one will be coming out. Here's the description. Barbie Reed gets laid off from her computer programming job the same day her 15-year-old daughter Penny is arrested at a peaceful protest. When Barbie picks her up from jail, she has no idea what happened to Penny at the demonstration. Fed up with playing by the rules, Barbie rallies tech-savvy moms with a radical plan to force the world to change. So, basically, she's Moms Anonymous, you know, only... whereas Anonymous tends to do things and then back off before they get into too much trouble, I get the feeling Barbie's not going to be backing off very easily. So, this ought to be fun. And then my indie pick for November... From Image Comics, Petrolhead, number one by Rob Williams. and Pi Par, and jump straight into the non-human race with 42 robo-gorgeous. Anyway, in a climate crisis ravaged future metropolis, an old grumpy obsolete smoke belching cigar chomping hot rod racing robot.
Wow.
That alone, okay.
Right.
Pushing the chips, I'm in. Is one 12-year-old girl's only hope. Together can they outrace the chasing RoboCops with an invention that might save humanity. So the non-human human race. Featuring weird little robots that drive. So it's Transformers and what was that Pixar racing one or Pixar Cars?
Cars.
It's Transformers meets Cars meets, I don't know.
RoboCop.
Yeah. Post-apocalyptic. Yeah. Yep. That's it. How about you, Jeff? What are your indie picks?
That's a really good question. I'm there it is. Okay, now I'm ready. Coming up this week, the EC Archives, Two-Fisted Tales, Volume 1. This isn't the horror, this is He-Man's Adventures. Not He-Man, He-Man, but Manly Men.
Mm-hmm.
Adventures. Anyway, originally published 1950-1951. When I was a kid, I inherited a bunch of comics from both my dad and my uncle. And these Two-Fisted Tales, I had a lot of them, and I remember them. And so nostalgia is triggering, and I'm going to give it a shot. Earth Divers Volume 1, Kill Columbus. This is one where for the first couple of issues, we just didn't have enough. So I took it out of my hold and let other people buy it. And, of course, those people came back and told me how fucking good it was. So I'll be taking a look at this. It's intended for mature audiences, but it's 2112. It's the apocalypse exactly as expected. Rivers receding, oceans rising, civilization crumbling. Humanity has given up hope, except for a group of indigenous outcasts that have discovered a time travel portal in a cave in the desert and have figured out where everything took a turn for the worst. America. So, anyway, they're going to go kill Columbus. That ought to work out great. My picks of the future from, let's see, Image Comics, Bad Karma is coming out with a hardcover. It's only going to be 4,000 copies, which that means if every comic book shop in the country orders them, a few hundred won't get any.
Right.
So it is limited. But, yeah, this one's sort of a crime drama by Alex DeCampi. He wrote Dracula Motherfucker, No Mercy, and Twisted Romance, Ryan Howe, and D. Cunniff. They're all amazing. They all put out amazing stuff.
Dracula Motherfucker is a really good book, so yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And then The Space Between, coming out from Boom Studios. This hits FOC in November. But it's a space drama. I like space dramas.
Fair.
You know?
They're so awesome.
Yep. This is a caste system book where somebody from the lower decks falls in love with somebody from the upper decks and mayhem ensues. So look forward to that one. What about you, Jocelyn?
Nice. I am so coming out this week from Viz Media. Is a trade paperback graphic novel, Until I Love Myself, Volume 1, The Journey of a Non-Binary Manga Artist.
Mm.
When they finally feel able to confront him about it, they get an apology, but not really the closure they were looking for. It turns out his reason for upending Pazuma's life was simple. He just could. Knowing that ugly truth really doesn't help Pazuma at all, and so now they begin a new step in their journey as a non-binary manga artist therapy. What will Pazuma discover about gender, society, and loving yourself in this final volume? And I just think that Poppy Pazuma sounds delightful, and I'm going to pick it up and read it, because why not? And then coming out independent in November, another trade paperback, this one from Image Comics, Indigo Children. I didn't pick this up in singles when it came out, but it sounds delightful because it sounds like aliens and they saved the world and then disappeared. And we're going to try and find out what happens with journalist Donovan Price. So, sounds delightful. Did you guys read that when it came out in singles?
No, I didn't.
Either of you?
No, I didn't read that one.
Yeah, it sounds really good. So I think I'm going to grab it. And that's it.
Awesome. Well, anything else this week, kids?
Not a lot. No, I've got more. If everything goes well, we're going to be launching a new show this week.
Oh.
Yeah, we're going to do the original episode of I Told You So. I'm going to do 10 episodes before we launch its own website and stuff. And so we'll be dumping that into the Left Show feed at theleftshow.com. I believe on Thursday, like I said, we're having not yet recorded it. I don't know what's going on, but that's my plan. Drop that on Thursdays. And then after that, we've got another show that I'm still keeping a secret, but that'll be in about 2 weeks.
All right.
So, yeah, I know I promised you guys shows early in the spring. And I'm finally getting around to it. So, you know, expect another round of fundraising here pretty quick. Sorry. So sorry.
Sorry. Right on. Sorry, not sorry. Nope. But, you know, you can help us out with that. You could do a lot to help us get these new shows on board by joining our Patreon squad at patreon.com/dfnmedia. Get on board. Join us up. The money that we make on Patreon helps keep this show free and provides you with additional entertainment. Results may vary. That we put out every week for you. This is just extra stuff. And every show, basically, we provide Patreon content, and you pay once, you get it all. So make it happen, guys. Join our Patreon squad. Let's grow this network together. This week on Patreon, we will continue our list of the 57 best quote Star Trek episodes of all time. And we had an argument. We were arguing whether or not Trouble with Tribbles deserved to be at number 40 last week. Moving forward in at number 39, we have more controversy. So enjoy. And until then, I will say, as I always do, until the Wasp's new partner is basically using the body of her stalker, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Asgard.